They must have wanted to tell me to shut up, he said. Now I understand that. I tried to help my parents financially when I could. They visited me in California each Thanksgiving between 1982 and 1984. Our time is up for today. I hope you will join me next time when we continue with Extraordinary, Ordinary People by Condoleezza Rice. This is Rosemary Scalessa for GARS, the Georgia Radio Reading Service.
That's all the time we have. Thank you for joining us for the Noon Book Hour. We hope you'll join us again tomorrow for our next installment from the Recording Library of West Texas.
Next, on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, the coronavirus update, followed by USA Today at 2. Hello, this is Michael from the Recording Library. Since the COVID-19 pandemic began last March, our volunteers have been recording at their homes. Our staff is also recording, producing programs, and programming the radio station from their homes as well. Because of the recent winter weather event, most of our staff lost power and internet. Fortunately, as of today, Sunday, the internet connection has been restored. We thank you for your patience this past week as we have not been able to log into our main studio computers to update programs or to even record a message to let you know what has been going on with our outages. Beginning Monday, February 22nd, we will once again be able to produce the local newspapers and update the programs we receive from other reading services around the country. Again, thank you for your patience and understanding. Here's an important note regarding our four book series. Because we were not able to update each book's daily broadcast due to the internet outage last week, we are going to resume where we last aired the latest hour-long episodes. Here are the book broadcast numbers we will resume on Monday, February 22nd. On the Noon Book Hour, at noon and 2 a.m. weekdays, we will resume Condoleezza Rice, A Memoir of My Extraordinary, Ordinary People and Me by Condoleezza Rice, with broadcast number 6. On the History Book Hour at 9 p.m., we will resume I Heard You Paint Houses, Frank Sheeran and Closing the Case on Jimmy Hoffa by Charles Brandt, with broadcast number 2. On the Armchair Adventure Hour at 10 p.m., we will begin Emma by Jane Austen with broadcast 1. And on the Mystery Hour, we will resume The Disappeared by C.J. Fox with broadcast number 10.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 61 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the upper 40s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the low 70s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the low 50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
Good afternoon. Welcome to your coronavirus update from the Recording Library of West Texas. I'm Michael, and it is Monday, February 22nd, 2021. And may I say, it is wonderful to be back with you, to have power and internet connectivity so we can do these broadcasts once again. First, I'll give you a rundown on some of the articles that we'll be reading in the upcoming minutes. Dr. Fauci explains comments about wearing masks into 2022. This may be the most crucial week yet on U.S. COVID-19 relief. Here's what we expect in Congress. Novavax says enrollment of its Phase 3 COVID-19 vaccine trial in U.S. and Mexico is complete. Sanofi and GSK start Phase 2 trial of their vaccine, and Phase 3 could begin by April. There's still huge amounts we don't know about long-term COVID. Evidence looks good that vaccines will reduce virus transmission, says UK minister. And we'll also have a Texas Tribune article about the coronavirus vaccine deliveries to Texas that are picking up after the winter storm. First, we'll look at the numbers, and these come from the Texas Health and Human Services. For Ector County, confirmed cases, 8,161. Probable cases, 7,455. Fatalities, 316. Estimated active cases, 1,526. Estimated recovered, 13,774. In Midland County, confirmed cases, 16,140. Fatalities, 236. Estimated active cases, 917. Estimated recovered, 14,987. And from the Texas Tribune, winter storm and power outages delay vaccinations and reporting of coronavirus data. Vaccine doses administered decreased. An average of 17,733 vaccine doses have been administered each day in the last week. As of February 20th, 4.6% of Texans have been fully vaccinated. Hospitalizations decreased by 961 patients compared with a week ago. As of February 21st, 7,146 Texans are hospitalized for the coronavirus. New cases. On February 21st, 3,617 new confirmed cases and 642 new probable cases were reported. New deaths. On February 21st, 130 new deaths were reported. Now, here are coronavirus briefs. After hitting an almost unimaginable highs of hundreds of thousands of new cases a day over the winter holidays, the coronavirus infection rate in the United States has plummeted to levels not seen since the fall, with a seven-day rolling average under 65,000. However, the good news, possibly due to rising vaccinations, seasonal virus patterns, or increased adherence to restrictions, pales in comparison to the grim toll of the pandemic that will hit 500,000 deaths on Monday. Yet, deaths too are falling. COVID-19 fatalities are almost 13% lower this week than last week, and hospitalizations are down 15%. The brutal winter surge may be slowing and vaccinations gaining pace, but experts warn that there is still a long way to go in the fight. Top infectious disease expert Anthony S. Fauci cautioned that masks might still be needed in 2022 and refused to predict when normal would return. Social media misinformation is driving vaccine safety doubts among women of childbirthing age. Health officials worry their hesitation affect efforts to reach immunization targets. President Biden and Vice President Harris will observe a moment of silence on Monday evening to honor the victims of the pandemic. The Biden administration reemphasized that educators do not need to be vaccinated before schools reopen, putting it at odds with some teachers' unions. In the United States, the virus has claimed nearly as many lives as the population of Atlanta. How can we grasp such a number? What if we imagined all those people traveling as one group, or killed in action, or all buried together? The U.S. is nearing 500,000 COVID-19 deaths, even as new cases are falling sharply across the country and the vaccine effort cranks up. Now we'll begin our articles, and we'll take the first article from the Texas Tribune. Coronavirus vaccine deliveries to Texas pick up after winter storm, by Perla Treviso, published February 20th. Texas will get nearly 600,000 first doses of the COVID-19 vaccine for next week, allowing the state to distribute the vaccine to the largest number of counties so far. The vaccines will be shipped to 563 providers in 230 counties across Texas, including 84,240 doses for large vaccine clinics in Harris, Dallas, and Tarrant counties, supported by the federal government, according to the Texas Department of State and Health Services. The state will also order about 360,000 to be used as second doses for people who are already vaccinated, especially those whose appointments were delayed by the winter storm, DSHS said in a news release. This week's storm delayed the delivery of hundreds of thousands of doses that were scheduled to arrive, preventing what might have been 1 million injections by hundreds of providers this week. More than 100,000 first doses and 300,000 second doses that were supposed to be delivered this week are still awaiting shipment due to weather conditions around out-of-state warehouses and across the country, according to the Federal Vaccine Tracking System. More than 3 million people in Texas have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, and nearly 1.3 million are fully vaccinated, state officials reported Friday. Now here are some national articles. Fauci explains comments about wearing masks into 2022, from CNN's Naomi Thomas. Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, said again on Monday that Americans might be wearing masks into 2022. And although there may be far less spread of the coronavirus, people must be prepared for the possibility of another surge of cases. On Sunday, Fauci told CNN's Dana Bash on State of the Union that it was possible that people could be wearing masks into 2022. The point I was trying to make is that people ask you to make a projection when there are so many variables in there that are unpredictable, Fauci told Gayle King on CBS This Morning on Monday. So when I said we might be, I didn't say we absolutely are going to be wearing them. I'm saying it is quite conceivable that if we actually go into the fall and the winter and there is still a degree of virus in the community, despite the fact that many people have been vaccinated, we certainly will likely, very likely, be much better off than we are now. But it is conceivable that there will be enough virus in the community that in order to be extra safe, we may have to be wearing masks under certain circumstances, he continued. That's the only point I was making. I was not trying to scare people. I'm saying we've got to be prepared, that variables are there, and we can get another surge, Fauci added. While he said he doesn't think there will be another surge, and he hopes there won't be, the United States has to be prepared for one. That's what I meant by don't just give up on public health measures, because we're going in the right direction, Fauci said. This week may be the most crucial week yet on U.S. COVID-19 relief. Here's what we expect in Congress, from CNN's Lauren Fox. This week is President Biden's first big test, as his massive relief COVID-19 relief bill comes together on the Hill with very little bipartisan support. On the cusp of 500,000 COVID-19 deaths and nearly 1 year into the pandemic that devastated the economy, saw rising unemployment, shuttered businesses, and shattered families, Democrats will try to remain united and pass one more massive $1.9 trillion relief bill, testing the party's ability to deliver for their new president and lead together. Bottom line, the next 3 weeks will give an early glimpse into how the Democrats' moderates and progressives work together, who is willing to make good on their threats to torpedo legislation, and who is willing to set aside their political grievances in the name of the bigger picture. The goal is to pass the bill and get it signed by March 14th. Everything has to go smoothly for that to happen. One party, having the House, Senate, and White House, is never as easy as it looks, and that's true even when talking about legislation that is overwhelmingly popular with the American public. When you ask members on the fence why they are voting for a bill that includes provisions they may not be so keen on, their answer is simple. You cannot vote against Biden's first big ask, and you certainly can't vote against it when polls like this package, when it polls like this package does. What you'll see in the House this week, the House Budget Committee is going to meet at 1 p.m. Eastern Time today to mark up their 591-page bill and work to pass it out of committee. The markup will be an opportunity for Republicans to message against the bill, rail against the increase in health care subsidies, attack provisions that provide funding to humanities, the arts, and the preservation of Native American languages, which they will argue have nothing to do with coronavirus, and rail against the overall price tag of the package. They'll offer amendments that we don't expect to pass, and then when everyone has had enough, there will be a vote to advance the bill out of committee and send it to the floor. The final vote on the package on the floor will be later this week, likely Friday or Saturday. Novavax says enrollment of its Phase 3 COVID-19 vaccine trial in U.S. and Mexico is complete. From CNN Health's Jacqueline Howard. The biotechnology company Novavax announced on Monday that it has completed enrollment of its PREVENT-19 trial, a Phase 3 study of its COVID-19 vaccine in the United States and Mexico. The trial has enrolled 30,000 volunteers across 118 locations, according to the announcement. In January, Novavax announced that early results from a Phase 3 trial in the UK show its coronavirus vaccine has an efficacy of 89.3%. The full enrollment of PREVENT-19 is another important step in building a body of evidence to demonstrate that NVX-CoV-2373 will be safe and effective across diverse representative populations. Gregory M. Glenn, president of research and development for Novavax, said in the company's announcement. The company's announcement also included the diversity breakdown of its trial participants, with 20% identifying as Latinx, 13% as Black, 6% as Native American, and 5% as Asian American. The announcement noted that 13% of volunteers are 65 and older. Sanofi and GSK start Phase 2 trial of their vaccine, and Phase 3 could begin by April. From CNN's Jamie Gumbrett. Sanofi and GlaxoSmithKline said Monday they had begun a Phase 2 trial of their COVID-19 vaccine candidate, and if results are positive, a Phase 3 study could start in the second quarter of 2021. The protein subunit vaccine uses Sanofi's recombinant antigen technology with a GlaxoSmithKline adjuvant, an immune booster. The Phase 2 study will include 720 volunteers age 18 and older in the United States, Honduras, and Panama. The trial will assess the dosage of the company's vaccine. Three different antigen doses will be tested with a fixed adjuvant dose, and two injections will be given 21 days apart. Phase 1-2 trials showed the vaccine candidate elicited an immune response in younger adults that's comparable to patients who recovered from COVID-19, but the vaccine did not produce the desired immune response in older adults. The Phase 2 trial will include equal numbers of adults ages 18 to 59 years and 60 years and above. Over the past few weeks, our teams have worked to refine the antigen formulation of our recombinant protein vaccine based on learnings from our initial Phase 1-2 study. Thomas Triumphi, Executive Vice President and Head of Sanofi Pasteur, said in a statement, We are confident that our vaccine candidate has strong potential, and we are very encouraged by the latest preclinical data. The company said the vaccine could be available in the fourth quarter if trial results are positive and the vaccine is authorized. In statements, the company said Sanofi has begun work against new coronavirus variants, which will be used to inform next stages of the Sanofi GSK development program. There's still huge amounts we don't know about long-term COVID, by CNN's Teresa Waldrop. From Washington State to Florida, from California to Massachusetts, facilities are opening to help the growing number of Americans who suffer from COVID-19 symptoms many months after their diagnosis. Just a little more than a year into the pandemic, it's not clear how many COVID-19 patients go on to develop what's called long-term COVID, or long COVID. A recent study that included mostly people who had just mild cases found 30% were reporting symptoms as long as 9 months after contracting the virus. Other studies have found a higher percentage. And almost every day that doctors work with these COVID long haulers brings new revelations about the syndrome, which manifests itself in a vast array of symptoms in patients of all ages and of every health status pre-COVID. We now realize it goes way beyond the standard post-viral syndrome, said Dr. William Lee, a physician of internal medicine and founder of the Angiogenesis Foundation, a nonprofit that focuses on the role of blood vessels in diseases. The symptoms can last for 9 months, and we're going on to a year now. We're still seeing new symptoms unfold, said Lee, a vascular biologist who has been researching COVID for almost a year. Evidence looks good that vaccines will reduce virus transmission, says UK minister, from Amy Cassidy in Glasgow. There appears to be positive news that vaccinations will reduce the transmission of COVID-19, according to UK vaccines minister Nadhim Zahawi. Speaking to Sky News Monday morning, Zahawi said, "Suffice to say, the evidence looks good. The Oxford team demonstrated their own evidence of cutting transmission by two-thirds." He was referring to a study by the University of Oxford that suggests the Oxford-AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine appears to substantially reduce transmission of the virus rather than simply preventing symptomatic infections. Zahawi also mentioned other evidence on reduced transmission thanks to vaccinations that Prime Minister Boris Johnson will outline later today as he announces England's roadmap out of lockdown. England would not be in a position to ease lockdown if we're not confident that the vaccines program is really beginning to bear fruit, Zahawi added. And that is your coronavirus update for this Monday, February 22nd, 2021, from the Recording Library of West Texas. I'm Michael. Once again, let me say that we are very happy that once again we're able to provide you with not only our coronavirus updates, but also the newspapers. Hopefully this week everything will return back to normal now that we have internet connectivity to our studios. Here's what's coming up next. We'll be bringing you the magazine Health Magazine to take us up to 2 o'clock, and then we'll have the national news from USA Today. At 3 o'clock, we will once again bring you the local news program updated. Here's what's coming up from the Midland Reporter Telegram that our volunteers have been reading. Record cold run ends in Midland. Sun warms Midland after 221 hours of freezing temperatures. Energy. Peyton says discussion needed about Basin's role in reliability of Texas grid. Energy. Frigid weather heats up commodity prices. Superintendent Ramsey's former district knows what Midland ISD is getting. An opinion column from Stuart Doreen. MISD's new leader deserves a clean slate. Devon CEO says worst is behind us. ERCOT reports record for sales. And West Texas Food Bank distributed 471,000 pounds of food before storm. From the Odessa American, lottery set for Odessa IDEA campuses. Warming up, big thaw is finally here. Odessa Police Department chief provides shooting details. Officers placed on standard leave as Rangers investigate. Vaccines continue this week. Ratliff immunizations begin Wednesday for first shots. Helping out. Pandemic spurred Sarah Vannon to action. New doctor helped organize community stakeholders. Pawn shop shifts to ammo store. And abuse and neglect with pandemics. Those articles and more coming out of our local newspapers at 3 o'clock. At 6 o'clock, the Wall Street Journal. Once again, thank you very much for joining us today, and thank you for your patience as we've had connectivity problems the past 7 or so days with the Recording Library studio and radio station. And also, thank you for putting up with my voice, which seems to be a little gravelly today. We'll be back again tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock for another coronavirus update. In the meantime, stay warm and safe and have a great day.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 63 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the upper 40s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the low 70s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the low 50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by GARS, the Georgia Radio Reading Service. Hello, I'm Allison Ramsey, and this is Health Magazine. Today, I'll begin reading from health.com. The first story is, the ACA health insurance marketplace is reopening February 15. If you need coverage, here's what to know. Looking for affordable health care? You'll want to read this by Claire Gillespie, posted on February 11, 2021. President Joe Biden has signed a number of executive orders during his first weeks in office, including a health care package. One of the initiatives reopens healthcare.gov, the official site of the Affordable Care Act, for a special three-month enrollment period from February 15 to mid-May. The first step toward Biden's promise to make health care more affordable and available, it gives Americans a chance to get health insurance through the Affordable Care Act, aka Obamacare. Outside the six-week period, November 1st through December 15th, that was set up by the Trump administration. For the many people who've dealt with unemployment and financial hardship during the COVID-19 crisis, it could be a lifeline. As of June 2020, about 7.7 million workers lost their employer-sponsored health insurance due to the pandemic, according to the Commonwealth Fund, a foundation focused on healthcare access. There's nothing new that we're doing here other than restoring the Affordable Care Act and restoring Medicaid to the way it was before Trump became president, Biden said as he signed the order in the Oval Office. Health Marketplace. Who is eligible? Anybody who lives in the U.S. and is a U.S. citizen or national or is lawfully present. Basically, if you're considered a U.S. resident for tax purposes, you're eligible. However, the order only applies to people in the 36 states that use healthcare.gov. The remaining 14 states and the District of Columbia have their own health insurance marketplaces and enrollment rules, so are excluded from the special enrollment period. Plans come in four metal categories: bronze, silver, gold, and platinum. The bronze plan is the least subsidized. 60% is paid by the insurance company, while the platinum plan has the lowest cost when you need care. FYI, the categories are based on how you and your plan split the costs of your health care. They have nothing to do with quality of care you receive. To qualify for one of the plans offered, your household income must be between 100% and 400% of the federal poverty level, APL. If you qualify for a subsidy, the amount is calculated on a sliding scale based on your income. But you won't qualify if you have access to Medicaid or qualified employer-based health coverage. The easiest way to find out if you qualify for a subsidy and how much that will be is to visit healthcare.gov. When you enter your expected adjustment gross income, the exact amount, not a ballpark, you'll find out how much of a discount you'll get. If you don't know exactly how much you'll make in a year and end up making more, you'll have to pay back some of the subsidy. According to an analysis by the Kaiser Family Foundation, around 15 million uninsured people could benefit from the new initiative. Around 8.9 million, 60%, of those would get financial help if they signed up, and about 4 million people could get coverage for free. What subsidies are available? There are two types of subsidies available, a premium tax credit and cost-sharing subsidies. The tax credit is available to those who buy a marketplace plan and earn a household income between 100% and 400% of the FPL. According to the Congressional Budget Office, the FPL was $12,760 for an individual last year in most states. If you qualify for the tax credit, you pay to just under 10% of your income toward a silver plan, and the federal government covers the rest, either on a monthly basis or as a lump sum tax credit. Some people may also qualify for cost-sharing subsidies. These are only available to people who make between 100% and 250% of the poverty level and sign up for a silver level plan. What about Medicaid? Depending on your situation and where you live, you may qualify for Medicaid, which provides health coverage for low-income families and children, pregnant women, the elderly, and people with disabilities. In some states, Medicaid is available for all adults under a certain income threshold. To find out if you qualify, healthcare.gov has a calculator where you provide your home state, family size, and income level. Generally, if you have zero or very low income, you won't qualify for subsidies because you'll be put on Medicaid. That story was the ACA Health Insurance Marketplace is reopening February 15. If you need coverage, here's what you need to know, by Claire Gillespie, posted on February 11, 2021. The next story is 5 Black Women on Why It's Essential to Prioritize Mental Health During Black History Month and How They Do It. It's meant to uplift and celebrate the Black community, but Black History Month can also trigger racial trauma. Here's how Black women in particular can protect their minds, bodies, and souls right now. By DeShonda Brown, posted on February 16, 2021. To say that 2020 was a lot for the Black community is the understatement of the century. The COVID-19 pandemic disproportionately affected and continues to affect Black, Indigenous, and people of color. Videos of Black women and men being killed at the hands of the law and receiving no justice dominated the news cycle. Unemployment rates skyrocketed for those with bills to pay and families to feed, and a volatile political climate, one that produced the most consequential election in the history of the U.S., further divided the nation. On top of all that, the Black community already has a full-time job dealing with past racial trauma and the day-to-day struggles of being an American citizen. So it's understandable how and why some of us could fall to the wayside while maintaining our mental health. That racial trauma causes fear, hypervigilance, shame, guilt, anxiety, and depression. Arabia Mollette, MD, emergency medicine physician at Brookdale Hospital Medical Center in Brooklyn, New York, tells Health. Black and indigenous communities and other people of color experience more severe forms of mental health conditions due to unmet needs and barriers, including discrimination and marginalization. Black History Month in particular, though it's meant to uplift the legacies of innovators, leaders, and cultivators of the Black community, can also have an impact on mental health. It can feel forced and inauthentic. We see the lovely messaging that companies put out while knowing that the same company has racist hiring practices or donated to racist politicians. Margaret Seide, MD, a board-certified psychiatrist in New York City, tells Health. It can be so that those politically correct Black History Month messages reminds Black people of the racism that is part of the fiber of this country. Black women in particular are often expected to feign holding it together, even as the world seems to fall apart around them. But during Black History Month, a time where racial trauma is triggered, yet Black excellence is highlighted, it's important to protect the mind, bodies, and souls of Black women who work in various fields and may be impacted by the lasting effects of being Black in America. Here, five Black women across various fields and occupations, from the front lines to freelancing full-time, reveal their mental health strategies in their careers and their healthy coping mechanisms while observing Black History Month and acknowledging the presence of racial trauma. I plan to focus on the positive and incredible contributions that Black people have made. As a certified life coach and meditation instructor, Kelly Green makes her mental health a priority on a day-to-day basis. The self-love advocate and yoga influencer is well-versed in the world of spirituality and guided meditations, and recognizes the relationship between mental health and the art of meditation. Studies have shown that there is a correlation between enhanced mental health and meditation, and as a practitioner who meditates and instructs others on how to enjoy the practice as well, I've witnessed many benefits over the years, she tells Health. According to Green, these benefits have included stress and anxiety relief, improved mood, better focus, and reducing emotional and physical tension. Though she routinely implements mindfulness and practices mindset, the Rise in Color founder is first and foremost a Black woman who acknowledges her role and part in the Black community. During today's cultural climate, she's often called upon by clients and organizations to lead meditations and guide and encourage them to incorporate mindset and mindfulness practices into their daily lives. But in order to present her best self to others, she must first take care of herself. I plan to limit explicit images and videos of abusive racist acts against Black people that have taken place, she says. Instead, I plan to focus on the positive and incredible contributions that Black people have made, along with meditating for at least 15 minutes per day by either listening to a guided meditation or engaging in a movement meditation like yoga. I like to focus on the beauty of being Black. Jordan Madison, LCMFT, is a licensed marriage therapist who works in mental health on a daily basis as she navigates through clients' marital endeavors. Madison sees her career as an opportunity to practice what she preaches as far as mental wellness is concerned. I cannot hold space for their emotions and pour into them if I am not taking the time to pour into myself, she tells Health. Of course, there are times where my work can feel heavy or draining, but knowing that I am living in my purpose makes it worth it. As the creator of Therapy is My JAM, Madison knows the importance of managing your mental health and is a necessary voice in the stigma removal of therapy in the Black community. During Black History Month, while she admittedly feels exhausted and emotionally weighed down, Madison flips the script by choosing to focus on a more positive outlook. In order to prioritize my mental health, especially during Black History Month, I like to focus on the beauty of being Black, she says. Not just our resilience and strength, but our creativity and ability to find joy. In doing so, it helps me to think positively, express gratitude, and not allow myself to internalize the negative messages society often communicates around Black lives. Madison also practices mental wellness by setting boundaries, self-care, and relying on her communities. I want to take it a step further and start therapy again. As a content strategist for R29 Unbothered, an online community for Black millennial women, Vanessa Koger has the opportunity to share a wellness space with like-minded creative Black women. I'm grateful to be on a team with women who champion taking time and space for themselves, she tells Health. That community provided a safe mental space for Koger during the height of the Black Lives Matter protests for Breonna Taylor and George Floyd over the summer. I was constantly alert and trying to give our audience a safe place where they could express themselves on our platform, she says. Many times I found myself also needing a moment and safe space to deal with the heartbreaking news, and many of those times it was my team and I uplifting each other that helped us get through. For Black History Month, Koger intends on continuing to express her thoughts and feelings, both at work and on her own time. My goal is to evaluate my day from my highs, my lows, and the ways that the next day will be better. I want to continue doing that for Black History Month, but I also want to take it a step further and start therapy again, she says. Over the last few months, I've gone through so many changes, mostly positive, and I feel like it's time to talk more about it. I focus on good and grace that Black people have done, and show my students that they can do it too. For Amber Corrine McGakin, a pre-kindergarten teacher in New Jersey, Black History Month is not just about reminding herself of the contributions of the Black community. She must also teach the children she works with. I plan to continue to teach my students about those Black leaders in our history that stood for everything opposite than the negativity that they are seeing on the news or hearing their parents discuss, she tells Health. Throughout her lesson plans, she intends on teaching a medley of Malcolm X, Rosa Parks, and Martin Luther King Jr., and the modern-day activists and Black leaders, including the Obamas, Tamika Mallory, and LeBron James. McKagan also plans to use Black History Month as an opportunity to show her students the importance of prioritizing mental health at an early age. Not only do I prioritize my mental health by focusing on the good and the grace that Black people have done, but also showing my students that they can do it too, she says. When I instill confidence in the youth that I teach, I help them to prioritize their mental health by not feeling inadequate or hateful towards a group of people because of what they know of our history of racism to be in America. I have consciously chosen Black brands to support. Sophia Lynn Lassiter, MD, an emergency medicine doctor in Miami, Florida, and a licensed medical cannabis physician, is redefining what rest and relaxation mean to her amidst a stressful time packed with racial trauma, seasonal depression triggers, and a pandemic. She credits her strong mental capacity with making the necessary career choices to align and curate a solid mental, emotional, and spiritual health balance. My ER work is more emotionally draining due to the acuity of the trauma, but my medical cannabis work is especially rewarding since I have the opportunity to offer instant pain and inflammation relief, she tells Health. Dr. Lynn Lassiter says that an important part of her work is acknowledging the health disparities in the Black community and working to correct them. It is especially significant to acknowledge undiagnosed mental disparities in our community due to lack of trust and access to clinical physicians, specifically psychiatrists, she says. My intention is to target and identify underdiagnosed Black and Brown mental health patients who could be candidates for medical marijuana and help them secure appropriate treatment. In addition to working directly with patients in need, Dr. Lynn Lassiter has also vowed to support more Black businesses during Black History Month. A few of her favorites include Brown Girl Jane's Heel Whipped Body Butter, The Wellies Berry Good Stuff CBD Drink Supplement, and 30 and Gold's Athleisure Active Wear. That story was 5 Black Women on Why It's Essential to Prioritize Mental Health During Black History Month and How They Do It, by DeShonda Brown, posted on February 16, 2021, on health.com. Switching to the January-February 2021 issue of Health Magazine, I'll read The Long Game. It's true that some of our cognitive skills peak in our 20s, say remembering where you left your car keys. But new science is revealing other empowering ways our minds sharpen over time, by Kimberly Hiss. For many years, neuroscience got aging all wrong. Researchers used to assume adulthood is boring. You had cognitive development until about 18, and then you had cognitive decline late in life. And that was the whole story, says Joshua Hartshorn, PhD, assistant professor of psychology and neuroscience at Boston College. But with advances in neuroimaging and autopsy exams, as well as online studies that can reach unprecedented sample sizes, researchers have begun chipping away at old theories. We've been seeing glimmers that more complicated things are happening in the brain throughout the lifespan, Hartshorn says. It turns out we have cognitive abilities that actually improve over time, and appreciating those strengths is important, says Elizabeth Kenzinger, PhD, professor of psychology and neuroscience at Boston College. Negative stereotypes absolutely cause us to underestimate the power of our brains as we age, she explains. Here are 7 ways we get better with age. 1. You can see the forest for the trees. While younger brains excel at noticing details, older brains take in the big picture. We shift to processing information in a more conceptual way, Kenzinger says. This is in part thanks to the hippocampus, because it gets better at the process known as pattern completion, which entails overlapping similar memories from the past. When your brain groups like experiences together, you're better able to distill their gist and thus derive meaning from them. For example, say you get cut off on a winding stretch of highway. If you were a teenager, you'd likely zero in on the make and model of the speeding car. But today, you might connect the incident with a memory of another near miss on the same road and make a mental note to be extra careful on that route. This pattern completion process helps us apply something we learned in a prior context to the now, says Kenzinger. It's what we think of as wisdom, she adds. 2. You have a knack for reading people. Researchers use the term emotion perception to describe our capacity to pick up on others' feelings. To measure this skill across age groups, Hartshorn and his colleagues designed an online study in which participants viewed photographs of eyes and tried to identify the emotions they portrayed. What he learned? Our emotional perception seems to peak later than other cognitive abilities and remain sharp well into our 60s. Emotional perception is really hard, says Hartshorn. This may explain why we're seeing improvement later in life, because you've had more years on the planet to learn this skill. 3. You've got stamina. I think lots of us have this feeling that as we get older, we're less able to focus because there are so many demands on our attention, says Laura Germain, PhD, associate neuroscientist and assistant professor of psychiatry at McLean Hospital and Harvard Medical School. But research suggests otherwise. In a 2015 online study with more than 10,000 participants, ranging from 10 years old to 70, Jermaine and her colleagues found that middle-aged adults had the greatest capacity to remain attentive. This staying power may have to do with changes in the brain's white matter and prefrontal cortex that occur around the same period in life. Whatever the reason, your laser focus not only helps you get stuff done, but it's also tied to success in other cognitive areas, including memory and learning. 4. Your brain builds resilience. Neuroscientists believe that different regions in the brain are linked up by circuits or networks, and they're discovering that over the course of our lives, those networks become more adaptable to change. If there's only one region within a network that stops working so well, other regions within the network increase their activity to compensate, explained Mirnova E. Said, MD, Associate Director of Psychiatry for the Montefiore Einstein Center for the Aging Brain in New York City. Researchers from Duke University and the National Institute of Mental Health found evidence of this phenomenon in a 2017 study when they used magnetic pulses to manipulate the brains of adults in their 60s and 70s. After the researchers decreased the activity in that area that controls memory processing, the participants' brains recruited other regions of the brain to help make up the difference. 5. You're more articulate. Studies from the 1970s and before suggested that a person's vocabulary and other aspects of crystallized intelligence, the technical term for accumulated skills and knowledge, were strongest at age 40, then trickled downhill. For a study published in 2015 in the journal Psychological Science, Hartshorne and his colleagues took another look at this theory, this time using web-based testing, and discovered the opposite. We actually found continuing improvement in vocabulary into people's 70s, he said. 6. You spot silver linings. When we're young, our brains zero in on negative information, says Jermaine. Luckily, that changes. As we get older, we prioritize the positive, which can be very helpful for our mental health, she explains. Indeed, research suggests we get better at seeing the bright side. Kensinger co-authored a study that tracked how younger and older adults reacted to the Boston Marathon bombing. The results, published in 2018 in Psychology and Aging, show that in the aftermath of the tragedy, older adults were more likely to focus on positive outcomes, such as the outpourings of community support and the acts of heroism, rather than the devastation and deaths and other negative outcomes. 7. You have a lot going for you. Our aging brains set us up for an especially purposeful time of life. There's a whole richness of things that come together, says Jermaine. Knowledge and experience increase, emotional intelligence goes up, there's a positivity bias, and over time you select goals that are meaningful to you and hopefully abandon less meaningful ones. If scientists only study so-called fluid abilities like speed and memory, the young brain looks like the better brain, she adds. But ultimately, the brain is specializing across the lifespan, and the older you are, the more it's specialized toward the life that you have chosen to live. And that's a great thing. Brain games. With decades of research under her belt, Kensinger uses insights from the lab to keep her own mind sharp. These are two drills she does when she's sitting in a waiting room or just taking a break. Word scramble. Choose something in the room and spell it out in your head. P-I-C-T-U-R-E. Then see how many new words you can make from it. Pie, trip, and so on. This is a good exercise for your working memory, the same function that helps you remember why you walked into a room. Trigger the feels. Focus on a nearby object, like a tree. Then think back to a happy memory linked to that object. Say, climbing an old elm with a friend at summer camp. Kensinger likes this drill because it forces you to search your mental archives for feel-good memories you might not otherwise think about. That story was The Long Game by Kimberly Hiss. The next story is Go Nuts for Your Gut from the section The Share. Looking for a better snack? try a handful of walnuts. A 2019 study from Pennsylvania State University found that eating 2 to 3 ounces of walnuts per day as part of a healthy diet was associated with positive changes in the gut. According to the research, the fatty acids, fiber, and bioactive compounds of walnuts act as food for the microbiome and produce beneficial bacteria. That story was Go Nuts for Your Gut from the January-February 2021 issue of Health Magazine. That concludes today's readings of Health Magazine. This has been Allison Ramsey for the Georgia Radio Reading Service. Thank you for listening to GARS.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3. Hello, this is Michael from the Recording Library. Since the COVID-19 pandemic began last March, our volunteers have been recording at their homes. Our staff is also recording, producing programs, and programming the radio station from their homes as well. Because of the recent winter weather event, most of our staff lost power and internet. Fortunately, as of today, Sunday, the internet connection has been restored. We thank you for your patience this past week as we have not been able to log into our main studio computers to update programs or to even record a message to let you know what has been going on with our outages. Beginning Monday, February 22nd, we will once again be able to produce the local newspapers and update the programs we receive from other reading services around the country. Again, thank you for your patience and understanding. Here's an important note regarding our 4-book series. Because we were not able to update each book's daily broadcast due to the internet outage last week, we are going to resume where we last aired the latest hour-long episodes. Here are the book broadcast numbers we will resume on Monday, February 22nd. On the noon book hour, at noon and 2 a.m. weekdays, we will resume Condoleezza Rice, A Memoir of My Extraordinary Ordinary People and Me by Condoleezza Rice, with broadcast number 6. On the history book hour at 9 p.m., we will resume I Heard You Paint Houses, Frank Sheeran and Closing the Case on Jimmy Hoffa by Charles Brandt, with broadcast number 2. On the Armchair Adventure Hour at 10 p.m., we will begin Emma by Jane Austen with broadcast 1. And on the Mystery Hour, we will resume The Disappeared by C.J. Fox with broadcast number 10.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 64 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the upper 40s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the low 70s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the low 50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 2 p.m.
Hello, this is Melanie, and I'm reading articles from today's USA Today, Monday, February 22nd, 2021. Starting in the money section, and on Mondays, there's no money column. So, first item, false jobless claims can spark tax troubles. This by Susan Tompore from the Detroit Free Press. Imagine seeing a tax form pop up in the mail which indicates that you need to claim an extra $5,000 or more in taxable income on your federal income tax return, and you never ever saw a dime of that money. But now, are you supposed to pay taxes on it? Whoa, what's that about? We're looking at a shocking tax time headache for potentially millions of victims of ID theft nationwide. They really don't owe extra taxes, but they will spend extra time trying to clear up a mess triggered by widespread phony unemployment claims in 2020 in order to file their federal 1040 tax return. Robert Pennock was supposed to see a 1099-G show up that reports $5,772 in taxable income. That's money, allegedly, that he received in state unemployment benefits through the Michigan Unemployment Insurance Agency in 2020. If he received unemployment benefits, it would be taxable income, but he was not laid off during the COVID-19 pandemic. He did not face any furloughs. He never applied and never received state